From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 723, Becoming Ansible with guest Josh Duffney. Recorded Monday, August 10th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Josh Duffney, who's a DevOps engineer, has been doing system administration work since 2011, and he specializes in infrastructure development, primarily focused on infrastructure as core. Josh is a Pluralsight author of several courses on the topic of automation, infrastructure development, and blogs at Duffney.io. And you are my go-to guy for Ansible. We've done a couple of shows around this now, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
Yeah. And all of that DevOpsy goodness, like this, it clearly there's no one right way to automate infrastructure. There needs to be choices here.
No, what I found is it's very hinged on your organizational design.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what does that mean? Like, I think so many organizations are naturally, are sort of organic, like they just emerge, there is no design.
Right, and that's part, well, that non-intentional design is still design. So right. A lot of traditional system administration is centralized. And so when you move to DevOps methodology and you try to implement infrastructure as code as you start to, you have to take that into account, and that'll actually influence how your repos are structured.
Right.
You probably have one team that does all the infrastructure, so you probably have one repo to start. Now, if you are more of a startup and you each team had the autonomy to create their cloud resources, you might have several and one per product. Mm-hmm. So that's what it means by organizational design influences it.
Yeah. What is that term? It's like inevitably the product reflects the organizational architecture. So if you have Conway's Law, right. And so if you've got three development teams and you're working on a product, you're going to end up with three sections of it, right? That are, mm-hmm. may or may not play well with each other either. So that, I mean, that certainly can shape an app, and it behooves us, at least in the leadership role around IT, to say, have we got an intentional organizational structure that makes the products the way we want to make them? So what have you been working on, Josh?
Over the last several months, my pandemic project has been to write my first self-published book. So I've been working on a book called Become Ansible.
Become Ansible.
Right. It's a play on words and syntax. So in Become, the way that you elevate your permissions is to use the Become module inside Ansible.
Right.
And so you can use the play on words this book will help you elevate your understanding of Ansible.
Interesting. Right. So, I'll include a link to this, but Become is literally the privilege escalation word.
Right.
So you're escalating my ability in Ansible.
That's the aim. Yep.
Okay. And so let's recap Ansible. This is the Red Hat product.
Yes.
Okay. And open source, free to use, infrastructure as code.
Absolutely. So the core version is command line driven, completely free. There's AWX, which is basically a web UI around that. That is also free. And then there's a paid version called Ansible Tower.
Enterprise,
you know, a support agreement and a web interface, just like AWX.
Nice. And then the language?
It's all based in YAML.
Right.
So it uses very simplistic. It's not really its own. It's not like HCL, like Terraform. It's very just baseline YAML.
Because YAML can get verbose too, right? Like people make pretty huge YAML apps. And I think the custom paste syndrome is the real battle, right? That you tend to.
Oh, yes. Yes. Especially between Windows and Linux. It's
oh, very boy. Well, do you feel like the industry is improving here, that we're generally getting more sophisticated in infrastructure as code?
I believe so. I had a really interesting post. So fascinating study. So I have this popular PowerShell blog post, mm-hmm. and I've been doing some email marketing research, and I was like, oh, this gets like 150 views a day. Maybe I'll put in maybe a sign up to the first chapter of my book that's on Ansible, and I'll get some people on the list and, you know, maybe some more sales or some more awareness. And I put it in there, and I got over almost 3,000 likes or 3,000 views, sorry, 3,000 views of this web form, zero signups. And so then I drew this Venn diagram, and I posted on LinkedIn of like, here's PowerShell and here's Ansible. And I know like three or four people that do both. And so like, there's almost no overlap between the two. And so that whole thread was a really interesting discussion of like, why isn't there more overlap? It works for it. I know that it was founded and started with Linux first, but it has really great Windows support. And really the distillation of that thread was, there's just a mindset difference between the two environments and a lot of organizations that are more Windows heavy, where they're still more of a traditional operating model and haven't adopted these practices. And even if they have, they struggle to switch the mindset.
So, I mean, if I hear you correctly, the vast majority of Ansible users are using it to manage Linux, not to manage Windows.
Correct. Yeah. And that's kind of an interesting twist in my book is it doesn't take a stand on a cloud platform or an operating system. So I have examples in there on AWS. So there's the whole thing. We'll walk you through how to do the book in a lot of tutorials on AWS or Azure, mm-hmm. but also there's examples for Windows and Linux. So throughout the book, you will actually configure a Linux Nginx web server and then an IIS Windows web server.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. And IIS and Windows in the cloud seems anachronistic, right? You would think you would be going more the web app side of things. Like if you're really thinking cloud.
Well, that was a stumbling block that I had when I got in the cloud, is I thought that I had to jump straight to PaaS services and I had to skip IaaS. But so much of the internet runs on virtual machines that so much workload is still going to be in the cloud on virtual machines. And if it's on virtual machines, it's going to be multiple operating systems. That's where Ansible really shined in being able to configure both, but through a single tool.
Although the scripts are not shareable, really, right? If you're making an Ansible script that's designed to deploy a Linux Nginx, you're not going to make that also run IIS. So you're just making...
Oh, no, that was totally separate. Yeah.
Completely separate. And I don't know that it may... I mean, there's a group of folks out there, I think, that have this dream of running in multiple clouds on multiple platforms like that and having one scripts to run it all. And I just don't see it as feasible.
No, it'll definitely... Just more variables in there. You can have a Linux and Windows combined into what Ansible calls a site playbook. Mm-hmm. And that was a really huge benefit is, you know, you can have your entire stack, whether that's made up of, Redis and Nginx and IIS, all have their own independent playbooks, but you can orchestrate them together with Ansible using a site playbook. So you have one playbook that will stand up your entire stack, but within side of that, there are individual playbooks that are specific for the function of the server,
platform configuration, and so forth. What about reusability? Because this has been a recurring theme for the past little while on Run As, talking about infrastructure as code. It's like, listen, I do too much cut and pasting in all of this code. And so when I need to make a change, it propagates through so many scripts. Like, I need that in one place.
So the concept in Ansible that I believe is chapter 7 or 8 in the book, it talks about Ansible roles. And there's two types. There's local roles, so with inside the same repo, and that just means it's in the same directory. It's in a directory called roles with inside your code base, and there's Galaxy roles. And those are more like Git modules that you can pull down. Git is one of the methods that you can. And so that's the way that you can create them to be not just repeatable, but reusable. So repeatable would be a playbook or a script that you can run over and over.
Right.
But then you have to copy and paste it everywhere. And so that's repeatable. Reusable would be the role where you have this particular functionality, like create web server. Mm-hmm. So that would be a web server role, and you can include it in several different products. So to go back to the beginning conversation, say there's three development teams. They each have a need for a web server. A platform team could then author a web server role that could be used across all three and maintain it. And so there's where your reusability is in the role that can be used to build up the configuration, but is generic enough to fit multiple use cases.
But can also set like certain policy things that you want, like we always use SSL, we always use this kind of authentication, like that kind of thing that helps for having templates.
Absolutely. And it also control drift. So as soon as you rerun that playbook, if it has fallen out of drift, it'll correct it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, there are a few different Ansible books out there right now. Are you taking a particular angle you think is important for folks, or just being more up to date?
I wrote it as, so the kind of the tagline that I have is, it's like shoulder surfing a coworker. And the aim with the book was to basically write an operating manual that I could hand someone that was going to be onboarded to the team. And mm-hmm. So the unique approach that I have is 2 years of frontline implementation and distilling those lessons learned into a book. So instead of writing about all the facets of Ansible, it's really a book for beginners. But the real lesson and value I think that it brings is teaching you how to use Ansible, not just how to write the syntax. So
right.
The first part of the book walks through building Ansible in a container and using containers as your workspace, deploying cloud resources with Ansible to give you a development environment. That was a big hiccup where I didn't want to run this stuff that I understand against my production servers. And so it walks you through building a development environment where you can feel safe to have a sandbox to run Ansible against. And then the middle of the book walks through and skills you up in Ansible from the very basic level, from running commands to playbooks to roles, etc. And then it wraps up with the subtitle of the book is The DevOps Way. And so the last several chapters set you up to use dynamic inventories and a CI/CD pipeline using GitHub Actions. Hmm. And so it walks you through building a release pipeline so you can get out of the business of clicking configure and treat. Once you get everything codified with Ansible or any infrastructure as code language, you can treat it just as an application deployment. And you do that through a release pipeline with CI/CD. And in this case, it's GitHub Actions that will, on push or pull request, run the playbooks that you want to configure your web stack.
Nice. And it's, of course, it's the repeatability that's everything here, that you can run it over and over again so you're just not afraid.
Absolutely. And then you can, you know, it turns green, or if it turns yellow, that means it changed. So you have a lot of confidence in that.
And ultimately are adding, well, actually, here's the question. You start as a beginner, but is there an evolution to using Ansible? Like your first project looks one way, and then you repeat that a few times. Now you build up a body of work, and now you change the way you use Ansible as the scale gets bigger?
Absolutely. That was a huge point of contention. Several engineers wanted to have the utopian vision in the beginning, and then the rest of us just wanted to get going. And so the evolution that I try to lay out in the book is you start with ad hoc commands and committing them to source control. So start that good habit of using source control, even if you're just taking notes about commands that you run.
Sure.
And then after you start to crawl, you begin to walk with playbooks to make it repeatable, and adding parameters in there and so forth, and learning where the variables are and abstracting variables from playbooks to group bars. And it's very much a progression. And as you go through the book, I have a repo on GitHub that you can see the full commit history of me going through the book myself, and it changes drastically. It's just a couple of commits of a README file with some commands to run, and then it comes in the end. It's a full release pipeline with a GitHub action workflow and a site YAML and roles that are pulled down from different Git repos. So it's very much an evolution.
And I'm sure there's points where you have to go, okay, well, now I'm going to be more formal about this, and I have to go do a little refactoring on all the existing work I've done to fit into this more formal model.
Yep, absolutely.
But that's also what growing up looks like, right? Like, you can't teach architecture until you've hammered a few nails. Like, until you've done some stuff, you don't value that there needs to be an architectural plan.
Nor do you. Yeah, you don't value and you don't understand without that context. And that's, if there's a single big lesson that I wanted to come through in the book, it would be that is progressively walking through and showing that you want to start with the end in mind, but you can't start at the end.
Right. And so I guess the real thing you can do for us in the book is not allow us to make mistakes like nor source control, that when we do get more formal, you have to start over, that you can migrate forward to a more formal process.
Yes. Yep.
Well, I'm glad you agree with me. Thank you.
No contest there.
Oh, yeah. You know, nobody's smarter than the person you agree with, right? And I'm going to interrupt for one moment, Josh, for this very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by the new Virtual Dev Intersection and SQL Intersection Workshop event. If you've ever listened to the SQL Q&A episodes on Run As, you've heard the fun, knowledge, and experience of some of the workshop leaders at SQL Intersection. And for the first time ever, the event is going virtual October 26th and 27th. Go to virtual.devintersection.com to register and check out the amazing lineup of workshops. On top of the keynotes from Scott Guthrie and Charles Manana, the workshops cover Azure topics, .NET development, as well as SQL Server-related materials. Of course, Tim Radney is hosting a workshop, and a number of Microsoft engineers, including Jeff Fritz, Scott Hunter, and Maria Nagaga. Spend a few hours and go deep on important topics at virtual.devintersection.com. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Josh Duffney. We're talking about becoming Ansible. So really getting serious about infrastructure as a code and working through this evolution that allows you to manage your infrastructure more and more. Because I also feel like when you're a novice and you look at the complexity of a fully automated pipeline and all the different pieces in it, it just seems overwhelming. Like, it'll stop you from getting started.
I know that exact feeling because I just switched roles, and my first assignment was to tear through a bunch of Terraform and upgrade a provider version, which seems simple. But in the process, I had to reverse engineer every single one of the modules pipelines. And so I very much feel that overwhelmness. And so my aim with the book was to help walk through all the progressive decisions up to creating it, and you create yourself so you understand it.
Right.
That was kind of my thing, was like, I'm debugging pipelines that I didn't build, therefore that I don't understand. But it's a really good way to learn.
Yeah. And that seems like scary work too. And isn't it a Terraform versus Ansible thing? Do they live side by side?
A lot of people like to make that claim because there's a tendency to use the tool that you know, or, you know, use the hammer that you know well.
Yeah.
And I see a perfect fit now using both of them. Interesting. Where Terraform is a lot better at provisioning resources and creating and deploying them. And then it has very limited reach into configuration. And so it's great for stuff in the cloud that is immutable, where it's going to go away. You're never going to rebuild it. So you're building a VM from an image, and you'll never configure it. You'll never make updates.
Right.
Or PaaS services, where there's no other choice but to rebuild it. Terraform is better, hands down. Ansible, on the other hand, works great and much better than Terraform if you need to maintain mutable infrastructure and there's changes that you need to make over and over. And when you want to update a Windows feature or install a package, you're not going to destroy it and take downtime on your application because it's not architected to withstand that recreation deployment method. And so that's where Ansible fits in, and they fit together really nicely.
Interesting.
In that mutable model, especially in cloud.
Because, of course, we're always told you should be immutable, but not our existing apps aren't like that.
Yeah.
So this is supporting the existing apps until we can get to that ideal world of everything is cattle and you can just make burgers with it. There are no pets.
Well, that's just the true value in Ansible, is that it reduces the toil enough on your legacy infrastructure that you can design that new world.
Interesting.
It gives you breathing room.
So give you back the cycles to actually consider how to turn those pets into cattle.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I love that balance, right? And it's just sort of honest about the reality of where we're coming from. Like, it's all about legacy. I recently was having a conversation with someone who said, you know what legacy really is? It's the stuff that makes you money.
Yes, exactly. So, absolutely is.
Yeah. Our ability to actually improve it gradually is pretty powerful, even if it's not particularly sexy. Building new things always seems to be more fun.
It's easier.
Good point. Yeah. And then built with these ideals that may or may not fit your problem or not, but they seem like ideals. So you want to do them. What else? Where else? What's the ultimate manifestation of Ansible here?
So the ultimate manifestation is a book that is on Gumroad. It's available there for purchase.
Cool. And is it paper? Is it ebook? Is it both? Do I want paper anymore?
It's just ebook right now, only PDF format. I kept it as simplistic as possible. This was really kind of an attempt to get me out of my comfort zone. I'd been wanting to write a book for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And I kind of let people's experience shy me away from it, get a little afraid because they didn't like the process. It was very hard. And so I tried to do a minimalistic MVP as possible to get across the finish line. I've been writing for 156 days straight now.
Wow.
For like 1 to 2 hours in the morning. So yeah, I'm pretty proud about that, and I want to keep it up. So I'll be probably starting a newsletter shortly just to keep me in the habit of writing, because I've loved it so much.
And you've worked hard at keeping it up. And why Gumroad? Like, I got to think the folks that were warning you off making books were working with traditional publishers and not having a good time, or were they all trying to do self-publish?
I think most of them were all published books. And that was the big deciding factor of doing self-publish. And I learned a lot. I learned so much about like the writing process and getting through that, you know, imposter syndrome block, mental block there. Mm-hmm. And then also just, you know, building a landing page and having an email list. And, you know, I did everything from, you know, writing the book. I did it in ASCII docs.
Wow.
So I didn't do it in Word document. I used my Photoshop skills from high school to create the cover. So if it's crude, that's why. But I just did every facet of the project, and I really enjoyed the process, and will most likely do another book of some kind. I don't know if I'm yet ready for a traditional publisher, but self-publishing was a lot of fun.
But you also have to question, what does traditional publishing even bring to the table anymore? You know, if you've got the reach and you're not bothering with paper because it's kind of archaic, so, you know, the physical bookstore doesn't make sense, but it's showing up as a Kindle book, it's showing up the places where people want to read, like, I don't know what the publisher does.
Yeah, especially if you, I think the value would be if you don't want to do any of the marketing yourself, if you don't have the audience.
Yeah.
And I don't have a large audience currently. Not too large anyway, enough that I've gotten a lot of great feedback on the book. Super mm-hmm. grateful for that. That's a value that I'd see, but I don't know. I think self-publishing has become more and more thing, especially for me. This book is a really concise, compact, dense, but it's not dense. It's compact and concise. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to write a 500-page tome. I don't have the time to read a 500-page tome.
Right.
And I know everybody else learning Ansible doesn't either, especially in the times that we're on. We have a lot more strain on our attention and our time. And I wanted as quickly as possible to get someone from zero to competence with Ansible. And so that, for me, was 140 pages, which is the book. So,
nice.
You know, within a month should be a very palatable amount of time to get through it with even like 30 minutes a day.
Yeah, I think it was the traditional publishers that were pushing us to make these enormous books because they sold for more money. You know, once upon a time, it was an 800-page book with a DVD in the back. And if you didn't do that, it wasn't worth making. And
so a fun trick that I did, I use Wordly to do the editing mm-hmm. and they cost per word. It's for your edits. So I rewrote a lot of my stuff to be even more concise because of that requirement versus the opposite. If I were maybe to do a traditional and I had a requirement of 500 pages, I might be more verbose. So I did the opposite and I tried to condense it down even more by using a paid editor, which would have been per.
So it was putting pressure on you to be concise. That's really interesting. You're manipulating yourself essentially to make a shorter book.
Yep.
And the challenge here is the shortest book logically is literally listing off the features. Workflow tends to be more verbose. Like, how do you keep that short as well?
For me, it was a good introduction to what the topic was. I read a book from Don Jones called Instructional Design, and that helped me tremendously. Mm-hmm. And so in there, it was, you know, like basically utilizing the things that are there. It's like the heading should give it the reader everything they need to know about the section they're about to read. And then the introduction should really walk them through. And how I did the workflow was I worked you up to a failure. I showed you the failure and then I showed you how to work through the failure.
Right.
That cut out so much by just showing you what it was instead of trying to describe the situation and the conditions that it would happen. I just let you hit the wall yourself and then told you how to, you know, walk around it next time.
But this is a flaw in the design of the product that you're going to tend to walk into walls. Like, shouldn't the path of least resistance be the path of success?
Sometimes, but in technology, the best way to learn is through failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a lesson that I wanted to try and demonstrate throughout the book. These are all things that every failure that I hit the book, I hit myself. I'm not going to let you avoid hitting the same wall that I did because then you'll learn so much from that lesson.
Right.
But what I do offer is a quick answer. So instead of weeks or hours on Stack Overflow or on blogs, it's just right there for you.
Interesting. And of course, the challenge here is you're actually a very experienced Ansible person. Like, how do you go down the path of the novice Ansible user?
Well, I think that's the perception. Writing a book, you're the expert. And I do have a good experience, but I am by no means an expert.
Right.
So like Jeff Gerling, he's the one that wrote the Ansible for DevOps for Ansible for DevOps book. The most popular Ansible book, we'll put it that way. He's what I would consider a true expert. And for me, I've only been using the technology for about 2 to 3 years. So I have a high level of competence in it, but I'm by no means an expert. And I did my best to keep those lessons very fresh in my mind. And I also used the team that I led as a gateway into the beginner's mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I really spent a lot of time documenting where they struggled and what hurdles they ran into to refresh my beginner's mind.
Interesting,
as yeah. I wrote the book.
And I think that's, you know, it's funny how expertise has its own problem in the sense of it's hard to help people get started. You know, it's one thing to step into an existing CI/CD structure that uses Ansible and say, here's how we maintain this, and this is the ritual we go through, versus we don't have one yet. How do we get going and get to that nirvana? They're very different things. And I think because you only ever do that build out once, it's the thing that gets lost. The maintaining is always refreshed.
It's a big jump too for people that have a system administration background, which was the majority of my team when we went through and implemented this. Source control was new to several of the people on the team. And so when you throw in like, all right, I got to learn a new tool, Ansible, and a new tool, Git, which the first few days that you start to learn Git, you'll cry. At least I did.
Everybody does. And
everybody does. So like you couple that and then a release pipeline and most traditional ones, I'm really grateful for GitHub Actions coming out because it simplifies so much. Yeah. But that's another whole like platform most of the time where like your CI is Team City and that's a huge hot mess. And then you have Octopus or some other delivery vehicle. So when you want to implement infrastructure as code with Ansible, you're actually looking at four tools and or platforms to adopt it. Yeah. So it's a lot to ingest.
It's a lot and a lot of different tooling, a lot of different approaches and a ton of accounts. And yeah, this, it's no wonder people resist it. And especially in these early stages, you're like, I don't see why we need this. And it's also hard. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't seem to provide an awful lot of value. Like you have to convince them that the value is there. Anyway, it is interesting to think in terms of reusability of all of these things and multiple people maintaining it, that you will run somebody else's script and that more than one person could maintain that script. Because I think that's kind of unchallenged ground for the average IT person. You pretty much built your own scripts for you. Nobody else used them.
That's the preface of the book was at the very when DSE first came out, I jumped on bandwagon really quick.
We did a show about it, as I recall.
Yeah, we did. if you want to go back and listen to that, please do. My opinion really hasn't changed about GC. It's great. I used it with Inside Ansible, but there's just a lot of challenges when you got to write it yourself. Like I got tired of my full-time job being creating a configuration management tool.
Yeah.
It's not what I want to do. It's not really where my value is. And so Jeffrey Silver has a really good talk where, you know, like we have no technical fellows at the cafe because that's not where Microsoft values or puts their value, their sure. value in the technical stuff. And the same thing's true with inside a sysadmin team. Like your true value, yes, you can script everything that Ansible does. The true value is the time that it saves you so that you can tackle even bigger things that add more value.
Yeah, things right? that have real which value equates, to the organization.
Right, and which equates to raises and promotions and all that good stuff. Going back to your point about the reusability, I wrote one Ansible utility, I think they're called a library, during the 2 years that I was there, during the 2 years that I used it. And that just shows how vast the ecosystem is of the custom resources that are out there that they have in the modules. There's so much coverage. And even for Windows. So like that's another unique take is I have a Windows background. I don't think there's a book written yet that has someone from the Windows side.
Right.
And the environment that I introduced this in was 95% plus Windows.
Right. Yeah. And so it does, you are bringing in a somewhat foreign tool, even though it seems to be fairly Windows friendly. But I imagine that so much of the documentation is written from a Linux perspective. And so Windows people will struggle with that.
I did for a while, but it was also a really great opportunity. Jeffrey Snover predicted 2 years ago, and I forget the name of the talk, that there'll be like this cross-platform engineer where they'll have to know Linux and Windows. And that's absolutely true. As you go into the cloud, the operating system is abstracted to a point where you have the capability of learning both. And that's what I've been doing. Ansible was actually a really great way for me to get into the Linux ecosystem. And I did that through learning containers. So Ansible has to run on Linux. We chose to run on CentOS and we used a CentOS-based image for a Docker container to actually run our environment. And we chose to run in a container because it gave a lot of benefits. It gave us the ability to version between the containers using tags. I could run it locally. And if there are any kind of weird DNS issues, you just exit the container and you start it back up.
Right.
But then another added benefit with a release pipeline is we got to use that same container in the release pipeline. So we knew that when Ansible was running in production, it was running on the same image build that was locally. And it gave us a lot of flexibility.
Yeah. So Ansible and containers go hand in hand. Like you're really not going to do Ansible without containers.
You know, a lot of people don't. Interesting. Have it installed on a server that they SSH into, or they front end it with AWX or Tower and it just runs. So I think very few people run it from a container. They use it to orchestrate application containers.
Right. But doesn't mean they have to run it in a container itself. And if you're not using containers for your apps, because you don't have to, then there's no containers involved at all.
Right. And then you got remote protocols you got to worry about, which is where Ansible fits in nicely.
Such as?
So to manage SSH,
right.
You know, for Linux host, Ansible can do that. And it can also manage Windows or WinRM PowerShell remoting.
Remote PowerShell, absolutely.
It's agentless. Yes, that was the biggest benefit. And the main reason why we chose to go down the Ansible route was we didn't want another agent to manage in our image.
Looking at you, Octopus Deploy. I shouldn't say anything bad about those guys. They've been great to me. They make an awesome product. But yeah, you have to put an agent on a lot of all your machines, and you may or may not be happy with that.
Well, all the other config management tools, Puppet, Chef, they require, DSC has an LCM.
Yeah, true enough.
It's just built in.
It comes with the OS, but it's still a chunk of code one way or the other. I mean, it's respectful that Ansible uses the existing tools, that uses SSH, which is going to be on every Linux instance, uses remote PowerShell, which should be on every Windows instance. You know, that is a better way to go if somewhat more complex. And restrained, too. Like, you got to make sure you've got all that stuff up to date.
Yeah, there's some environment dependencies there when you don't have the agent. Mm-hmm. The other drawback is long-running tasks, but then that's kind of a constraint in there by design where hopefully you don't have too many of those.
Right.
There's other avenues, scheduled tasks and other stuff, or default to something that has an agent.
Awesome. Well, Josh, really fun to talk to you. Congratulations on the book. I appreciate your sort of insight on how you got here for making the book that way. And hope folks will buy a copy off of Gumroad.
I hope so, too. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And we're looking forward to what writing looks like now that the book is finished for you, too. So I'm sure we'll see some more stuff coming from you.
Yes, there will absolutely be more writing.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for coming on. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.